Good morning. The time is now 10 a.m. We will call the meeting to order. This is the monthly meeting of the D.C. Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. I am Chair Tamika Collier. We do have a quorum today. I am joined on the dais by Shamari Wade, Norma Hutchinson, and Darren Sobin. We will start with adoption of the agenda. I'll give you a second to look over the agenda and note any changes. All in favor of adopting the agenda as is, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Right, we have adopted the agenda. Moving to the approval of the meeting minutes, Mr. Flowers, did we get the July 9th changes?
We did.
Did you print them out?
Yeah, I left a couple of copies in the conference room. Bring those down.
Is it in the Dropbox? Because I'm looking at the old one with the same issues, right?
So I raised that last night, and they made changes to it, but we still don't have it. So we're going to push that.
Well, I'm looking right now. It says, well, that's the memo.
The one that I have in the Dropbox still has. Can you go get the copies, and we'll move on to the August 10th meeting? I did review those, and I saw no changes. I'll give you a few minutes to look at it. Any comments or changes on the August 10th, 2018 meeting minutes? All those in favor of approving the meeting minutes as is, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, we've approved those meeting minutes so they can be posted on the website. With the July meeting minutes.
Oh, is this it?
have that?
I don't have it.
I don't have this one.
Okay, these are it. Yeah. Did you look at them?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you?
As near.
These are the July minutes?
Yes.
I think it needs still needs to reflect on page 10 in the Snowden case that I recused myself and stepped out of the room.
We did look at that, and we listened to the recording. Stepped out of the room for the closed meeting, but not the public meeting. Nothing that was really discussed publicly. There were no deliberations.
I see. Got it.
You don't have today's.
Okay, otherwise looks good to me.
So you don't have. All right. All those in favor of approving the July 9th, 2018 meeting minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, those meeting minutes have been approved and can be posted on the website. Thank you. We will next turn to a report from Open Government.
Good morning, Chairperson Collier and members of the board. I am Nikkel Allen, Director of the Office of Open Government, and I am pleased to present this monthly report on the activities of the OOG. The OOG is continuing to fulfill its mission of ensuring that all persons are entitled to a full and complete information regarding the affairs of district government and the actions of those who represent them. I'll start with that. There was a statewide independent living council complaint, and on September 5th, 2018, the OOG issued an advisory opinion finding that the statewide independent living council was in violation of the OMA for, one, failing to timely publish to its website or the website of district government draft and final meeting agendas for the public meetings that occurred on March 2014 through May 2018, two, failing to timely notice the public the DC Register of its upcoming meetings, three, failing to timely publish in the DC Register its 2015 yearly calendar of meetings, four, failing to publish in the DC Register its 2018 yearly calendar of meetings, and five, failing to timely publish final meeting minutes to its website or the website of the district government. The issuance of this opinion was the result of a member of the public contacting the OOG for assistance in locating the July 19th, 2018 SILC public meeting notice.
Has that been posted to your website yet?
We'll be posting it today.
Okay, can we get a copy of that?
Yes, I'll make sure that you have a copy as soon as this meeting is concluded.
I'm just going to say, ordinarily, you could put it in the Dropbox, too.
I'll do that as well. The second issuance of an opinion was for we have not issued the opinion yet, but the second complaint was for the Office of Unified Communications. As the board recalls, the OOG recently issued an advisory opinion on whether it is consistent with FOIA for the MPD to require requesters of certain records about themselves, first-party requesters, to attach to the request proof of their identity at the time of the submission, and that attorneys making FOIA requests on behalf of clients supply proof of identification for the client or the attorney, such as a copy of the client's or the government-issued identification and proof of representation, such as a sign authorization or a retainer agreement. A similar issue surfaced with OUC, and this is a FOIA matter. The OUC recently required valid identification of a requester to process a FOIA request for a 911 transcript in which the requester was a caller. The OOG is addressing the matter, and it will be preparing an advisory opinion. We're currently investigating it. In essence, the requester went to make a FOIA request in person and was not allowed to make the FOIA request by OUC for the 911 transcript.
So you're making a distinction between being allowed to make the request versus receiving the actual information?
Right. Right. This requester was not able to even make it without showing an ID. So we may address both issues since they're germane to the complaint, and we will keep you posted. Moving on to informal Open Meeting Act and FOIA advice. Since the July board meeting, the OOG responded to 5 FOIA and 2 open meeting requests for substantive informal legal advice and assistance, including a FOIA request draft. In addition, the OOG completed requests for technical assistance. The OOG completed 17 requests for technical assistance regarding the Open Meetings Act Boards and Commissions Central Calendar. The OOG also completed 2 requests for technical assistance with the Open Meeting Act Boards and Commission Record Processing. Moving on to OOG assistance with a public body meeting. On August 29, 2018, the OOG provided assistance to the Major Crash Review Task Force by reviewing and physically posting their notice of public meeting and ensured all necessary public notice steps were taken for the entity to lawfully meet. As the board may recall, the OOG attended for the purpose of monitoring and providing assistance with compliance with the Open Meetings Act, a public hearing of the Major Crash Review Task Force last month. This task force is one of the newer bodies. Next, I'll discuss trainings. The OOG director, myself, participated in the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors Conference in Philadelphia from August 26 to August 29th. The conference concerned the effective creation of governmental program for television and social media. The conference also featured presentations on closed captioning and the retention of social media content as a government record. The OOG will use information gained at the NUTOA conference to produce video content for training and outreach purposes. The OOG is also exploring options to assist public bodies with recording and publishing meetings using social media, such as Facebook Live and YouTube. I have a meeting with Archive Social this afternoon to get more information about archiving Twitter and other similar social media accounts that the government uses.
And will that be a part of the records management plans that you all are working on?
Yes, we did include that. And it's very fascinating. It was very fascinating to see how other jurisdictions are using social media in the public meeting sessions. There was one jurisdiction where they actually conducted a meeting using Facebook Live and allowed participants to comment using Facebook Live. I don't know how feasible that is, but it was interesting.
Huh.
To see.
Interesting.
Litigation update. There's no new activity since the last board meeting in the Open Meetings Act case concerning the D.C. Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs. The OOG has not received from MACA the 1-week advance notice of its meetings pursuant to the court's March 5th, 2018 order. However, there's no indication that the MACA is in violation of the order at this time, as no meetings of the commission have been publicly noted since April 17th, 2018. Next, moving to outreach activity. On August 23, 2018, the OOG distributed electronically an invitation to the Washington Legal Clinic for the Homeless to attend the Ethics Day presentations. The OOG previously conducted FOIA training with the WLCH. The WLCH is sending the invite to the Consortium of Legal Service Providers and Fair Budget Coalition. And lastly, as reported last month, the OOG is voluntarily participating in the district's performance planning process. The OOG distributed the draft FY 2019 performance plan to the board via email, and I believe it was also in the Dropbox for your review. One area the OOG seeks to track is the office's audits. Currently, the OOG conducts audits upon the receipt of a complaint. The OOG plans in FY 2019 to conduct plan audits of agency websites for compliance with FOIA and the OMA. So the proposed tracking mechanism contemplates a performance measure connected with the OOG's conducting of audits. And if there are no questions, that concludes the OOG's report.
I do have a couple of questions. I want to make sure I understand the performance plan. Your KPIs are tied not to agency compliance, but to how many audits you conduct. Or okay.
Correct. I think now it reads that the way that you have listed it, but we will be making edits.
Okay.
To reflect that.
Okay.
And any other edits the board may suggest.
Okay. The only other issue I have for you is regulation.
Yes.
With the BSA, I want to make sure you are tracking the need for new regulation to address the new structure.
We will begin working on that this month and report back to you at the next board meeting, our progress.
Okay. Any other comments?
I did have a question about objective two, about the audits for the websites. Just wondering if we're setting ourselves up for something here when we say workload measure C, number of agency websites in compliance.
Hmm.
So we don't have the ability to, I mean, they have to fix their own website. It's not like we can fix it for them, but we're going to hold ourselves to that standard. Are you concerned at all about, you know, not getting the cooperation you need to meet your own KPI?
Yes. I'll make edits accordingly. I do not want to set myself up for failure. I think there's a way to capture.
Well, that's the point I was making about
right.
tying it to the number or percentage of audits that you
right.
do versus compliance over which you have no control.
So probably a percentage measure would make more sense.
Agency websites reviewed, agency websites or agencies, percentage of agency websites not in compliance that were notified of noncompliance might be a good one.
Right.
Yeah. But overall, I think it's an excellent performance plan.
Thank you.
Very realistic.
Any other comments? Thank you for your report.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Brent Wolfenbarger, Director of Government Ethics, providing the report on the Office of Government Ethics. As of this month, we currently have 39 investigations that are open. We opened 4 last month. We closed 4, and we have 10 investigations that are currently stayed. One is a Maryland court fugitive case. One is stayed in D.C. Superior Court from the Office of Employee Appeals. 6 cases are stayed in relation to ongoing investigations being conducted by the Office of the Inspector General, and 2 are pending Civil False Claims Act actions being taken by the Office of the Attorney General. Publication and reporting obligations. We submitted the financial disclosure statement list to the DC Register on August 14, 2018, and we submitted the list of registered lobbyists to the DC Register on August 28, 2018. Trainings and outreach attended by our staff. Our auditor, Ishmael, took a course on project management essentials. Attorney Asia Stuart Mitchell attended two DC Bar CLE courses. First one was Private Eyes and Professional Rules, Legal Ethics of Using Investigators on August 13th, and the second one was Ethics and the Government Lawyer on August 30th. Attorney Ashley Cooks attended an ADA course entitled ADA Title I Roundtable. As the board may recall, she's taken over the responsibility of being our ADA coordinator following Mr. Grimaldi's retirement. And lastly, I attended the Maximizing Your Leadership Potential course offered by the Center for Creative Leadership in Hyattsville from August 15th through August 17th, and it was an excellent program. I really enjoyed it. Trainings conducted by the staff. Since the date of the board's last meeting, we conducted or participated in six trainings, one more than the five reported at the last meeting. The trainings consisted of two new employee orientations, our monthly ethics training, two Hatch Act trainings held at the Office of the Attorney General, and a training for new accepted service employees held in conjunction with the Mayor's Office of Talent and Appointments. The 2018 Ethics Day will be held on October 4th following the monthly board meeting. The following entities have confirmed participation: the Office of the General Counsel for the DC Council, Office of Campaign Finance, the OIG, DC Bar, and of course the Office of Open Government. We have already received positive inquiries from those employees who attended last year and plan to attend this year.
Do we have any idea on attendance numbers?
I do not know. Do not know. Ashley, do you have any information?
We have about 30 people signed up.
Okay. Good.
Newsletter. As mentioned last month, we are engaging OCTO in discussions to possibly allow us to disseminate both OGE's monthly newsletter and OOG's quarterly newsletter via mass email to all DC.gov email account holders along the lines of Mayor Bowser's weekly newsletters. OOG and OGE will also cross-promote one another's newsletters when our own newsletters are published. We are still planning to relaunch OGE's monthly newsletter at some point in September, and our new attorney, Sonia King, is leading that effort. One of our major goals is to transform the newsletter from a Word or PDF publication into something more like Mayor Bowser's weekly newsletters, where the content is directly embedded in an email as well as being available for download from the agency's website. And Sonia has reached out to some former colleagues who have experience producing those type of materials for their insight and assistance.
Has OCTO provided any response or indication whether they're inclined to allow you to use their system?
I do not know. Mikhail, do you have any information on that?
I reached out to their public information officer, but I haven't heard back from him yet. I will follow up with him today.
Thank you. Advisory opinions, advice, and formal advice, approximately 46, which is somewhat lower than the 64 reported at the last meeting. However, last month's meeting was held a little later than usual on August 10th, so the shortened time frame since the last meeting may partially account for this reduced figure. Formal advice requests, we have received no formal advice requests since the board's last meeting. Ethics legislation / comprehensive code of conduct. The Council's Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety is considering the Campaign Finance Reform Amendment Act of 2018 and asked for our comments. One of the main purposes of the legislation is to prohibit contractors from contributing to campaigns. The bill also establishes a new Campaign Finance Board as a new standalone five-member board. The sections that particularly relate to this board's jurisdiction concern the provisions for enhancing financial disclosure requirements and training, and a proposed amendment to the Hatch Act provision that permits one employee of the mayor, attorney general, or a council member to fundraise while the employee is, quote, on leave. Although a similar bill died in committee during the last council period, there does appear to be some movement on this new bill. With respect to the Hatch Act provision, we recommended that the term, quote, on leave be clarified to specify that the term includes only annual or unpaid leave. The concern was that an elected official could grant an employee administrative or some other form of unearned leave to engage in fundraising, and we did not believe that was what was originally intended in the legislation. With respect to financial disclosures, the bill requires all board and commission members to take Vegas ethics training within 90 days of beginning their service. The training can be electronic and requires Vega to detail all contributions to lobbyists, all contributions by lobbyists in the agency's publicly available online quarterly reports. This legislation may also present an opportunity for us to change the definition of public official to clarify who is required to file a financial disclosure statement. We made the change in a rulemaking, expanding the salary threshold to include not only accepted service but also career service and other classifications, but it is the statute that most employees refer to when they're trying to figure out if they are actually required to file or not. And the current statute is worded with that accepted services limitation on it, so we think this would be a good opportunity to engage the council and try to convince upon them the need to have consistency between both the regulation and the statute and the wisdom, really, of expanding that definition. Rulemaking. As we informed the board at our last meeting, we're still contemplating rules to further flesh out the procedures and standards to be applied to both FDS lobbyist waivers and appeals. We'll also need to amend our lobbying rules to ensure that they are consistent with the changes the council recently made in the Budget Support Act. Budget. WADA, Sonia, and I are working with a team from CMTS, which is our vendor for the new case management system. We're meeting on a weekly basis, and our next implementation meeting is tomorrow at 1:30. Per the terms of the solicitation, the new system must be operational by September 30th. And it's been so far, I think, a pretty good experience. We had about a two-hour-long conversation with them last week, provided them with the Visio workflows to help visualize the way we want to process incoming complaints and move our investigations forward. And they sent us some spreadsheets with screenshots of the what the new system will kind of look like and the pull-down menus. And we have to provide them with information regarding the type of investigations we are conducting, like FDS violations, lobbyist violations, things of that nature. And then the goal is to be able to track more effectively the types of investigations that we tend to get, the agencies where we tend to get those complaints on a regular basis, and to provide greater insight into where we are spending our time in investigations to see if there's something we might be able to do better down the road. So still moving forward with that September 30th implementation date.
Just in my own experience when it comes to implementing a new AMS system or docketing system, the biggest hurdle is the migration of the original data from the old system. And vendors will tell you how easy it's going to be, and it never is. And so you really do have to hold their feet to the fire on that because you don't want the data corrupted in the migration process.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we've had WADA involved in this from day one. As soon as the CMTS was awarded the contract by OCP, we had a call with the vendor, and he was asking for to be provided with the structure of the new database. And I think he's been reaching out to ProLaw to try to get the same type of system architecture for the database that we are currently using so that that process is as smooth as possible. And he has been an invaluable asset in that process because he is a steadfast, tireless advocate of our need to ensure that we understand what the new system is going to look like and that the data that goes into it is accurate.
Sorry, can we just go back quickly to the lobbyist rules?
Sure.
So remind me, on the BSA, the changes that they made, when are those actually effective?
The first new filing period will be January. Now, technically, the law became effective in October, so when the new filing period is in January, it will be, I guess it will probably be for everything that accrued since the last reporting period, and then quarterly thereafter.
Okay. So if there's some expediency with respect to these rules, we got to get them out.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So other than the case management system, we are currently continuing to work on completing the remainder of our planned fiscal 18 acquisitions within our allocated budget, including possibly replacing some of the board's video conferencing equipment, which has reached the end of its useful life due to vendor-related technical support issues. Mikkel, Wada, and I had a meeting with Octo about 2 weeks ago. They came, looked at our system. I believe Wada had a site visit with one of those guys last week as well. They're recommending that we replace at least one component in our system because the video codec has reached the end of its useful life. We got a quote from Octo to replace all the stuff that was related to that. It was going to be about $27,000. We had met with A1 just a couple days before that, and it looked like we were going to have a surplus of $25,000. So we are still trying to figure out if we will be able to swing the acquisition of this one asset with fiscal 18 funds.
Okay.
Just buy the equipment and install it later.
Yeah.
And are we talking about this stuff in here?
Yeah, it's a piece of equipment over here in this server box.
And is this something that we would take with us if we moved to a new location?
Yes. Yes. Staffing. We have one permanent position that is currently vacant, the paralegal position that DCHR has reclassified into a third investigator position. The reclassification has been completed and approved. They informed me on Tuesday that the vacancy should be posted by yesterday, but I have not been able to find the time to log in to try to see if DCHR's website actually has that posting. And as of this morning, I hadn't received any emails from DCHR, but I'll follow up with Antoine today. I would also like to introduce you to our new attorney advisor, Sonia King, who just joined us last month. Sonia most recently served as deputy section chief with the OAG, where she supervised 18 lawyers and 5 support staff in the juvenile section of the public safety division. Prior to that, she spent more than 7 years as an assistant prosecutor in Prince George's County, Maryland. After starting her career as a law clerk for a circuit court judge in PG County and a brief stint with the PG County Public Defender's Office. She's got a wealth of experience, has a wealth of experience running investigations, and we're tickled to death to have her on board.
Welcome.
Welcome. Where were you in law school?
Penn State.
Penn State. Okay. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Unfortunately, I must regretfully pass along the news that our compliance specialist, Nikayla Redd, has been offered an opportunity that is too good to pass up, and her last day with us will be Friday, September 14th. She has accepted a position, I believe, as an attorney with an investment bank pursuant to an application she submitted prior to joining Bega, and she will be greatly missed. Upon receiving Nikayla's resignation last Friday, I immediately asked DCHR to post the compliance specialist position for competitive recruitment as opposed to a term appointment.
Oh, good, good. Congratulations, Ms. Redd.
Yes, certainly. Attorneys should serve as attorneys. Good luck.
Litigation. Status of pending cases, Garen Price. Both Mr. Price and the district have filed their briefs. The most recent docket entry reflects that a calendar notice was sent, but the docket does not indicate the date of oral arguments. Edwin Adokwe, dismissal of petition was announced by Judge Holman in D.C. Superior Court on February 9th. On August 14th, Judge Holman released a written decision affirming the board's decision in this matter. In upholding the decision, the record the judge relied upon consisted of Adokwe's pleadings, the director's opposition, who was Mr. Sobin at the time, and the recording of the board's proceedings. The decision is very deferential to our authority. It is simply based on the ordinary APA substantial evidence standard. Interestingly, one of the judge's quotes was that the policy considerations underlying the deferential standard of review stems from the fact that many disputes involve, quote, specialized considerations for which there are no judicially manageable standards, unquote. And that decision was placed in the Dropbox for your review.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Larry Hicks, This is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February of 2014 after a contested hearing. OAG recently informed us that they refiled this case on July 5th, and Mr. Hicks was scheduled to file his answer on September 4th.
And do we know if he did?
I do not.
I just looked. There's no docket entry for it yet.
Okay.
He might have filed.
Might have made it in the system yet. Rashawn French versus Bega, D.C. Superior Court. The employee is appealing the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine. The pro se case was filed on April 6th. There's been no change in the status of this case since the last meeting. The next status hearing is set for November 30th, 2018 at 2 p.m. And lastly, there's Jay Dillon versus Bega. This is an employment matter involving a separated employee. An appeal of the OEA judge's decision was timely filed last week. The matter is now on appeal before the OEA board. The employee's deadline for filing an opposition to our petition for review has not yet expired. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. There are currently 275 financial disclosure statement non-filers remaining, 69 of which are ANC commissioners. We sent a non-compliance notice to the non-filers on August 1st, giving them until August 10th to come into compliance. That notice was sent via both email and hard copy. However, the ANCs were not included in the list that we submitted to the DC Register.
Sorry, guys. Apologies.
We are gearing up to begin sending fine and enforcement notifications. We plan to send the first wave of notifications on or about September 10th, 2018, since our last notification advised non-filers that they should file by August 10th to avoid fines. We reached out to all ethics counselors we have on record and asked them for any updates with regard to their role as ethics counselors, contact information, or any changes in the agency's ethics counselor. And we also asked them to assist us with updated contact information for PFDS non-filers.
Do we have any contact with the ANC's offices? I'm thinking we use the ethics counselors as a way to reach out for employees and to help us get people in compliance. Do we have a similar mechanism to assist us with ANCs who are not compliant?
I imagine the process would involve communicating with Gottlieb Simon at the ANC office, and this might be a good opportunity for us to have that discussion and also to re-engage them on the discussions that kind of stalled out last fall about the scope of our authority regarding ethics compliance.
That's where
ANC.
I was going with this, yes.
Okay.
Have we had any discussions with Mr. Simon about ANC compliance?
We've had discussions with Mr. Simon, but not so much trying to improve the ANC's compliance with the filings, but addressing their concerns about the new system, you know, hearing the complaint that, you know, I guess they have historically raised and definitely raised this filing season about you know, questioning the need for them to file their certifications and, you know, things of that nature. But I do think that your point is well taken, that this would be a golden opportunity to engage them in discussions on both of those subjects.
And how is the new system that we are not using? Are we testing that still?
We are. Internally, BEG employees have been testing the lobbyist activity report and registration systems. We gave Octo some pretty detailed suggested improvements last week. We were originally scheduled to have the beta testers meet either this week or next week, and we've decided to push that back to the beginning of October to give Octo an opportunity to make the changes that we've suggested. In my view, the functionality behind the scenes in the database may be fine, but a lot of the way the information is solicited from the users could stand to be improved. For instance, when I was doing the testing, I was kind of envisioning myself or role-playing like I was the managing partner of a lobbying firm. And so when I went in, you're given the option to add clients. And so I was adding the clients as clients of the firm and creating individual accounts for both the firm and for individual lobbyist employed by the firm. And what I found out was simply creating a client account at that first dashboard did nothing to affiliate them with individual lobbyists or the firm. And so I could not create a activity report for any of those clients until I went beneath that to an individual lobbyist and recreated the client's account. It was very cumbersome. So I believe that the feedback we gave Octo hopefully should be helpful in resolving some of that user functionality issues.
So I know you've been doing a lot towards the beta testing for the lobbyists. I want to make sure that the FDS stuff doesn't slip too.
Correct. Okay. It's my understanding that they have been working on improving some of those things that we pointed out during the last filing season, but we will address both the FDS and the lobbyist systems when we meet with Octo next.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As discussed in the portion of the meeting on rulemaking, we have begun drafting the rulemaking to implement standards for FDS partial waivers, FDS designation appeals, and lobbyist fine waivers. We also instituted an FDS special project. I met with our auditor, Ishmael, and our intern, Barry, and tasked them with determining how many D.C. government employees have not been designated as either public or confidential filers, despite earning salaries in the publicly available information that appear to place them above the threshold that would ordinarily be required. Out of 36,558 employees, 5,589 have been designated as either public or confidential filers, leaving 30,696 who had not been designated. Brian and I are working with Ishmael and Barry to determine the number of non-district employees who are required to file, such as the ANCs who may not be employed by the district, as well as the number of district employees who have not been required to file despite their current salaries. Part of that process involves looking at a spreadsheet of D.C. government employee salaries and identifying those who surpass the minimum threshold and presumably should have been designated as public FDS filers, and we will update the board on our findings at next month's board meeting. I think that this is a timely project as well with the Campaign Finance Reform Act. As we indicated earlier, the opportunity to engage the council in discussions about changing that statutory definition. If we can show some of the confusion where these salaries appear to be above the threshold that would warrant filing, but they're not, it seems like the confusion between the statute and the regulations would be at least one partial explanation.
Okay.
Lobbyist program, as indicated earlier, we're testing out the new electronic framework for the lobbyist program in the process of selecting beta testers from a pool of lobbyists to test out the new system. We've tried it out internally and offered suggestions to Mark McDermott at Octo. Nikayla and Ishmael are working on sending out enforcement letters to lobbyists who failed to register and or file lobbyist activity reports. Nikayla is working on an implementation timeline to ensure that the changes in the lobbying statute are reflected. And we also had a handful of lobbyists filing waiver requests for the board's review. The first one was submitted by the Maryland DC Credit Union Association. Pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.32 subsection C, the board may waive the penalty imposed for untimely filing of a lobbyist activities report for good cause shown. The lobbyist's stated reason for his firm's failure to timely file its activity report is that he was hired on July 2nd, 2018, and that he submitted his own information on July 9th. He states that he was not notified about the fact that the lobbyist activity report deadline had been missed, but upon discovering that fact, he immediately filed the report when he got back to his desk. The respondent's lobbyist activity report was filed on July 23rd. The amount of the fine levied was $90. We would recommend that the board deny this request for a waiver. The credit union didn't even register until Mr. Murray registered them on July 23rd, 2018, and it seems illogical for him to have assumed that his predecessor filed the activity report on the association's behalf.
Okay.
Any questions?
Have we had one in the past where we found good cause to be the change in either personnel or anything else? I mean, I can't recall one myself. Do you guys?
I can't recall one.
I'm somewhat sympathetic, though, to the fact that the guy just started the job and didn't file, you know, because he didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, as I indicated, ordinarily I would be kind of sympathetic to that if this was a previously registered firm and he came on board, but he's the one that registered them. So I don't understand why he would think that the guy whose place he took would have filed the activity report because the guy left before they were even registered.
So just so I understand it, so the credit union is the client, right?
Correct.
He's the lobbyist for the client, right? And so they both have to register.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? He comes in and he realizes that his client isn't even registered, so he does that.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that in a timely fashion? Well, I guess he does, because if they're never registered and he just starts lobbying on their behalf, then he has how many days to do it?
Right.
But then he had to file an activity report for the previous 6 months?
In July.
Did he admit to having someone lobby for the credit union even though they were never registered?
That wasn't an indication in his email, no.
So if he registers his client, why does he have to file an activity report for the previous 6 months if it's a new sort of thing going forward?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we don't know for sure that they were not engaging in lobbying during the time frame in question. I've not examined the contents of the activity report to see if it spelled out any activity during the January through June 30th period, but we can check on that.
Maybe if the chairman doesn't mind, maybe we could table this one until the next meeting when they get a little more information about the need to file it in the first place, now that happened.
Did you have comment?
Well, as Mr. Flowers pointed out, they would have had to have been registered to even receive notice of the lobbyist activity.
That was actually my question. It sounds like this was a previously registered lobbyist, so they would have known the process. Is that not correct?
Who's the okay, let me see.
I think it's probably an issue maybe Nikayla can shed some light on, because she's been in communications with the gentleman in question.
Maybe not.
Do you remember the gentleman's identity?
I'm not sure if he is a frequent lobbyist, so I think it would be worthwhile just to make sure that he understood about the lobbying activity report, just because I think the reason why he thought his predecessor filed it is because when he took it on, he would naturally have to register as a new lobbyist for that client. And so I think that's where the confusion was. But he didn't ask the previous, his predecessor, whether he filed or not. He just assumed. So that was the disconnect. He knew that he had the responsibility to file, but he just wasn't certain that they filed.
What they filed previously. He knew that he, as an individual, had filed. I see.
Right.
I agree with Mr. Sobin. Let's get more information, and we can take this up at the next board meeting.
The second request for a waiver Unite Here Local 25. The respondent stated that he had multiple reports on the online system and was confused with the lobbying registration, which would not let him into the lobbying report. He said he could not respond to Bega's email notice due to being on vacation until August 1st. The The respondent's report was filed on August 1st. The amount of the fine is $160. We recommend that the board reject this request. The explanation offered does not appear to warrant a waiver.
So he had multiple reports. Did he file anything on time under the multiple reports?
That's probably something we'll have to do some additional investigating.
Would not let him into the lobbying report. I mean, if it's a system failure, there's some sympathy there.
There would be, but you know, this is the DataNet system that, is my understanding, has largely functioned pretty well over the years. So I'm personally unaware of any complaints that that the system would not allow him to enter that particular area, especially if he was doing so for other clients.
And he should have called right away if he was having trouble, right?
Yep, and you know, made arrangements to have somebody check his email while he was on vacation.
Yep.
All right, anybody have any more questions? All right, this is for United Here Local 25. The director has recommended that we deny the late fee waiver request. All those in favor of accepting the director's recommendation and denying the late waiver fee request, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Right, we have denied the waiver request for Unit Here Local 25.
Thank you. Next item, Nikayla is working on responding to COGL to reflect changes made in the Budget Support Act. And inquiry letters have been sent to two entities concerning allegations that they have engaged in lobbying activity without being registered.
What's the response to COGL about?
I believe they're asking for changes that have been made to the ethics laws.
Oh, that's the big manual they put out every year that one of the law firms does. Yep, we want that to be accurate. It never is.
Because they never make the changes we send to them. okay, next item is nonprofits. We have received $5,200 out of $11,200 owed to us by nonprofit organizations who did not qualify for the $200 credit. We are in the process of drafting second notices to the remaining organizations requesting reimbursement. Lobbyist activity reports. We submitted the required list of lobbyist registrants to the DC Register on August 28th. We are gearing up to beta test the new lobbyist e-filing system with the assistance of lobbyists. And we've also begun discussing how to notify the lobbyists of and implement the changes in the lobbyist rules, which take effect October 1st, 2018. Lobbyist reminders went out to all registered lobbyists on Monday, June 4th, 2018. The deadline for filing lobbyist activity reports was July 10th, 2018. And as of last month, as of most recent check today, we had received 429 lobbyist activity reports. There were six lobbyist non-filers.
So the list of lobbyists that you submitted to the DC Register, did you look to see how that compared to years past?
I did not. But we can take a look at that, Madam Chair, and provide you with an update.
Well, my thought process is one of the questions that we've gotten in the past with legislation being pushed as to the definition of lobbyist is how that definition will change. And I'm wondering if we have a sense as to who is registering now and if there's a trend to more people registering because they know there's legislation out there, or if we're seeing a decrease in the number of people who are registering as lobbyists.
I don't think that we've seen a decrease. If anything, maybe a small increase. Uh, Next item on my report is non-confidential investigations. First matter is Henry Rochelle Wilson. We served Ms. Wilson with a ministerial fine order by email and certified mail on August 27th. As stated in the order, at the close of our investigation, we concluded that Ms. Wilson violated D.C. Official Code Sections 1-1162.24A1A, Roman numeral 1, Roman numeral 2, and Roman numeral 3 by failing to file fully completed public financial disclosure statement forms that truly and accurately reflected her and her spouse's business interests, activities, and positions with outside organizations for calendar years 2014, 2015, and 2016 before the annual May 15th deadlines in 2015, 2016, and 2017. We fined Ms. Wilson $2,750 for these violations. She has responded to the order by inquiring about her appeal rights.
Have you given them to her?
Yes, they were in the notice, the order.
May we expect an appeal?
I would anticipate, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we.
Was this the first one you did under your new rules?
It is.
How did it work?
I think it worked pretty well. We gave her about a week to submit additional information for our consideration. She missed the deadline, but she submitted it the next day, so I went ahead and accepted it and took it under consideration. And I didn't think that the evidence that she submitted constituted evidence that she didn't violate the statute, but it could be taken into consideration as mitigating circumstances regarding the beneficial effects to the community from some of her outside activity. So while we had originally thought that a $1,000 fine for each of the 3 years would be appropriate, we reduced that by $250, taking into consideration those mitigating circumstances.
Okay, good.
Next matter is Courtney Snowden. This is.
Are you going to talk about this in the confidential portion?
We can.
You can recuse yourself during the confidential portion, but this part has been out in the public, and we should update the public.
Okay. Yeah, it's an investigation referred by the OIG involving the deputy mayor for greater economic opportunity. According to the OIG's report of investigation, on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and ordered, directed, or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM sections 1807.1, subsections B and C. Next matter is two related investigations, Antoine Wilson and Jennifer Niles, pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 1-1162.12, subsection A, we opened preliminary investigations into whether former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles violated the Code of Conduct by transferring the Chancellor's daughter to an out-of-boundary school. After the start of school year 2017-2018, our team has completed their investigations in these cases, and I am awaiting their findings and recommendations. Next matter is Henry Jack Evans, 1101-003. This is a formal investigation into allegations that council member Evans violated the council code of conduct. We are still reviewing and analyzing documents we have received pursuant to discovery requests to formulate next steps in our investigation. Next matter is case number 1706-001, Henry Rustin Lewis. This is a formal investigation into whether Rustin Lewis violated the Local Hatch Act, D.C. Official Code Section 1-1171.01, et cetera, by filing as a candidate for at-large council member while also being employed as a professor at the University of the District of Columbia. The Local Hatch Act prohibits employees from filing as candidates for partisan office within the district. OGE is currently reviewing Mr. Lewis's personnel records, and Mr. Lewis is currently cooperating with our investigation.
Do we have all the personnel records we need?
I think we're still we've asked for W-2s. There was a question about whether he was an employee versus a contractor. It's our understanding he is an employee, but we're awaiting the receipt of the W-2s. I think we have everything else.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions? At this point, we will move to the public comment portion of the meeting. I'll remind everyone that you have 3 minutes. We will start on the phone with Mr. Sindrum. Good morning.
Mr. Sindrum? Mr. Sindrum, can you hear me?
Okay.
Shall I leave them on?
Is there any other public comment?
You can disconnect it.
At this point, we will move to executive session. I move that the board, I move that the board enter into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B4A to discuss personnel matters including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees,
Hello?
Employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B10 and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B13.
So moved.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, we are now in executive session at 11:01. Thank you.
Okay, I'll call you back when they
Thank you, guys.
All right, the time is now 11:40. We are back on the public record. What do I need to report out?
The negotiated disposition?
I need something on that. Can I get the order back or... No. You can call him back so he can participate as in listen if that's our standard process, but he doesn't have the floor.
Hello, Mr. Sindrum. I'm calling you back to rejoin you to the public session, but I just told you you can't participate in public comment. Okay.
All right, the time is now 11:42. We are back on the public record. I have one matter to report out. N. Ray and T.S. Hayes, case number 14-01-001. The board has approved a negotiated disposition between the Office of Government Ethics and Mr. Hayes, the details of which will be posted on the BAGL website. And that concludes the meeting of BAGL. The next board meeting is October... ...4th. At 10 a.m. Thank you.
Would that be the Ethics Day, Madam Chair?
Mr. Sindrum, yes, that's Ethics Day.
Right. Is the public invited?
It's open to the public. It's open to the public.
I did want to weigh in, but evidently there was a disconnect. Public comment? Points?
Next month.
Is the Ashley Cooks, is she around?
Mr. Sindrum, if you need to reach Ms. Cooks or anyone else in the office, you can call the front office number.
Very well. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Negotiate disposition. Thank you, because I will take it.
Oh, man.
Right.
I'm like,